current traffic. That's traffic somewhere around, oh, I'd say 1958, 1959 on Rush Street near Mr. Kelly's. And the Newberry Library is opening an exhibition. Actually, it is open. A Night at Mr. Kelly's, which recreates a night in the town in Chicagoland in the mid-20th century. Got a lot of things I want to say about this. I saw a movie which was in a certain way mind-boggling. I know that a lot of very famous people were at Mr. Kelly's. But before I expound on it, let's get to David Marienfeld. David, are you there?
Hi, John. So great to talk to you again.
Yeah, looking forward to this. I know that you're at a screening of the film that I'm talking about.
We are. We're doing private screenings now. We're at the Historic Cliff Dwellers Club, actually.
And that you'll be have to be leaving to do a Q&A. But I got to get to you, first of all. Okay, let me see if I can pull this together. I'm watching the movie, right? And I know about Mr. Kelly's, and, you know, we've got Ella Fitzgerald and George Carlin and Bette Midler and Barry Manilow and Bob Newhart and Dick Cavett and Lily Tomlin and Barbara Streisand and the Smothers Brothers and Tom Dreesen and Bonnie Kolak and on and on and on. And then it also talks about the London House and the Happy Medium. And then on to the screen come, I don't know how many people even know who Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders are or were. I do. And when I saw his if you don't know what this guy looks like, look him up. He had, how would you describe his hair, David?
Well, I'd say as a silver bouffant that reached to the sky. And he put on a wild show, as you said. We interviewed some managers, and the manager's job was to go out and repair all the broken windows he broke every night. And they'd have to go repair it every morning and get ready for the next day.
I was just amazed to see Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders in there. I mean, as I said, Lily Tomlin, Bob Newhart, Fred Willard, all sorts of people. And that really said a lot to me that you were aware of someone like Wayne Cochran and had him actually perform here in Chicago, because he was sort of a, not that well-known, but I would say, I don't want to say a cult following, but there was a certain group of people, such as myself, who knew of Wayne Cochran. So,
well, of course, that's what George and Oscar Marienthal were famous for, was bringing in these unknown acts from New York or Southern Florida or whatever, and before they could hire them back for the option contract, they were already too big and playing concerts.
Right.
Whether that be Barbara Streisand or Newhart or any of them.
And also stories about the London House and the Happy Medium. Can you tell the Barbara, what's very impressive right off the bat in the movie is a story that Barbara Streisand tells. Can you tell us that story?
Well, Barbara came in, and actually I was there as a 12-year-old kid. I was 12, she was 20. And she came up on the stage, and you know, she didn't look like much. She looked like a young high school girl, right? Kind of a hippie looking young woman. And but when she opened her mouth, everybody knew that you were really in the presence of genius, and you just could not believe that voice. And so she was there when she was doing the cover for the People album, record. And she went after hours, and we have some great shots of her hanging out in Rush Street in the early morning hours. But she went over to Oak Street Beach, and she went with Don Bronstein to take the cover shot. And they took a bunch of her on the beach looking into the sunset. Then all of a sudden she said, well, I want to do one with my back to the camera. Mm-hmm. And so they did that, and Barbara, being Barbara, wanted it the way she wanted it, so she prevailed on the record company to put that that photo of her back on the cover, and against all their objections, but as sweet vindication, as she said in the film, the album cover won a Grammy.
It's a great story. It's the beginning of that movie, and it really grabs your attention right off the spot, because she does a great job telling it. And the impression, and I knew a lot of this already, but it reinforced it watching this film, that that these big names, for sure, absolutely, the biggest names around, well, before they perhaps were the biggest names around, but there was also a distinct element of racial harmony, let me put it that way, whereas in other parts of the country, African-American comedians like Dick Gregory were not welcomed with open arms. And at Mr. Kelly's, that was like a regular occurrence, not only with minorities, but women. I mean, it was incredible. This was just and the fact that this was such a mecca for everyone, and that it was all inclusive like that, and it never, as far as I could tell, caused a ripple at all. It was the way, just a standard operating procedure.
Well, it was standard operation procedure for Kelly's, but I wouldn't say it was all harmony. They certainly pushed the boundaries, and they did get pushback from some audience members. And, you know, it was just the cutting edge there. So,
yeah,
as Dick Gregory says in the film, you know, you were all right, you know, performing at Kelly's, but nowhere else.
And, exactly. Yeah. And that's something that I think that's something that people should, if they don't know, should realize about Mr. Kelly's, because it's very easy to get that element lost in the fact that this was the mecca for show business in the Midwest, and it only sat, 200 people, I think, was
capacity? Was only 200 people, yeah. And what's interesting is when I started doing this film seven years ago now, you know, my father really never talked himself up as a vanguard of civil rights movement or anything. He was a businessman and believed to treat people fairly, and it was really only that I learned from it by talking to people like Dick Gregory, like a Chicago retired undercover cop that would go into Kelly's every week. And the reason he was there is because he had a white girlfriend, and that was one of the few places he felt welcome. And so these people told me this story, and it's really inspirational.
Well, we're talking names like Ramsey Lewis and Richard Pryor and Eartha Kitt, Ella Fitzgerald, Muddy Waters, Count Basie. As I say, it was a regular occurrence. And also, Tim Reed and Tom Dreesen, Tim and Tom, the first biracial comedy team, did a lot of work at Mr. Kelly's.
Well, Tim and Tom have been great supporters of the project. You'll see where Tim was inspired by his whole career when he saw Richard Pryor on stage for New Year's Eve, and he was still in the advertising business. And Tim and Tom, when they went in there as you say, the first interracial comedy duo, and were a second act behind Della Reese, and really cut their chops there.
Wow. Can you imagine going to a place that holds 200 people, you see Della Reese and Tim and Tom, and let me tell you, the stage is right on top of the audience. I mean, literally, here's this performer, there's a small lip of the stage, and then there are the people sitting in the seats. It was close, intimate, fantastic.
And don't forget about the food. If you have a great steak or lobster for $6.95 and great martinis.
We're going to do more about Mr. Kelly's and the London House and the Happy Medium and what's going on at the Newbury when we come back on 720 WGN. John Landecker at 720 WGN. We're talking about a new exhibit that has opened up at the Newbury Library, A Night at Mr. Kelly's. And it is an incredible collection of, well, I guess memorabilia would be one way of putting it. Allison Hinterleiter. Do I have your name right, Allison? The last one at any rate? Or even
that is
one?
Correct. Yes, Hinterleiter.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows? You are the... What is your title? You have a very impressive title.
Yes, it's a named title. The Lloyd Lewis Curator of Modern Manuscripts and Archives at the Newbury Library. And I also curated the Night at Mr. Kelly's exhibition, which just opened last week.
Yes. And give us details right now as to how people can attend this at the Newbury, what the hours are, and the whole procedure of seeing this.
Yes, the admission is absolutely free, so that differs us from Mr. Kelly's, which used to have a cover charge.
Yes,
it is free and open to the public, and we are open Tuesdays through Thursdays from 10 to 7, and Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 5. So we're closed Sundays and Mondays, but please come see us Tuesdays through Saturdays in the gallery. We have some merchandise in our bookshop and a lot of public programs, including some free movie screenings of David Marienthal's film.
Yes.
So we've got an exciting spring and summer. We're having the exhibit until July 20th. So you've got the rest of March, April, May, June, and most of July to come visit the Newbury and come see it.
Well, as you curated this exhibit, what are some of the items that impressed you that are now at the Newbury?
Well, one of the first things that David showed me before he donated the whole collection to us is this wonderful Mr. Kelly's bar tab. It's just a regular old bar tab from 1959, but it's signed by comedian Lenny Bruce.
Wow.
And you can see that in October 7th, 1959, he bought 6 cordials for the table. The total cost of the after-dinner drinks was $7.50, and he left a $2 tip, which was very generous.
Indeed it was. And it also gives an indication to the type of entertainment that Mr. Kelly's was known for, because his material was, well, I guess controversial would be one way of putting it.
It was very controversial,
yeah.
Yes. He pushed the boundaries, and so did a lot of other entertainers, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Joan Rivers, Lily Tomlin, Steve Martin, Freddie Prinze, all of these folks. Mort Saul, sort of the original political comedian.
Yes. Yeah.
He was one of the earliest people to perform and record a live album, actually, at Mr. Kelly's.
Yeah. I did watch the film, and there were, if I remember correctly, there were 2 fires in the history of Mr. Kelly's. And after the first fire, they improved the sound system to such an extent that artists could come in and literally record records at Mr. Kelly's. And that led to a lot of live performances by these huge entertainers that were recorded right on stage at Mr. Kelly's. It's incredible. I mean,
jazz and comedy. So jazz greats like Ella Fitzgerald live at Mr. Kelly's, Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, and Buddy Greco, name you don't hear very much anymore, but he recorded a live album. And then all the comedy greats like the Smothers Brothers and Mort Saul, and later on Freddie Prinze, his one and only comedy record was live at Mr. Kelly's.
Man.
So it's a very storied career, really impressive.
Oh, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough to come to Chicago about 1972 and went to Mr. Kelly's maybe 2 or 3 times. One time, Bette Midler, and I believe Barry Manilow was her, band leader.
He was a piano player. He was just a piano player. He wasn't really a name yet.
And then another time, Barry Manilow was headlining, but his career hadn't exploded. And I'll never forget this. Part of his set, Mr. Kelly's, was some of the jingles he had written for TV commercials, including Kentucky Fried Chicken. I'll never forget it.
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
Hey, you know, you got to play what you know.
That's
play the
right.
hits.
Yeah. Lily Tomlin, I saw there. I feel very fortunate that I was able to attend, because I didn't realize at the time the enormity of the place that Mr. Kelly's had in the American entertainment scene. It was really unbelievable mecca.
I learned that from the film as well. People were saying, if you knew, if you're a comic and you got on Ed Sullivan and Mr. Kelly's, you knew that you made it.
Can you believe that?
And that's saying something for a spot right in the Midwest, you know, not New York, not LA, right in Chicago. Mr. Kelly's was the place everyone wanted to play.
Bonnie Kolak tells the story of being told backstage that John Lennon and Yoko Ono are sitting in the audience. And she's like, no, they aren't. And
she didn't believe it.
And they were.
Then there they were.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for being with us. I hope a lot of people attend this at the Newbury, and I hope you have a continued success. Thanks for being with us tonight. I appreciate
Thank you so much, John. Thank you, very much. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. Got to tell you, I think I got time for this. You know, the movie has Mr. Kelly's. You know what? I don't have time for this, but I'll get to it sometime tonight. How a certain radio station in the building that the London House was in, how certain employees snuck in and were served for free. Okay, that'll be coming up. But right now, it's time to get into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.